Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast for the bisexual community. Welcome, C-Maurice Love, to our show.
I'm John.
Thank you.
I'm Lynette.
And I'm C-Maurice.
Woohoo! Hi! So happy to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Yeah.
So we're talking about polyamory and what it is like to be a black bisexual man, among many topics I'm sure we'll touch today. Maurice, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your blog?
Oh, sure. You must mean the Bi Poly Peeps Rage page, right? Is that
yes.
The blog you mean? Yes. Well, okay. It's basically just a spot for me to go to share my musings and inspirations around current events that are taking place in the bisexual community as well as the poly community. It's also a mirror to the bisexual polyamorous people of color, bi couples and allies Facebook page, which is a mouthful to say, as you can tell. But that's basically it. I mean, it's real simple. It's just a spot to kind of update people of color about the various issues and things that are going on in the community.
Thank you.
Great, great. So I invited C-Maurice to our show today to talk about polyamory and the bisexual community. I asked him here to clear up some of the misunderstandings I have seen in our community lately. We are a diverse community. Monogamy and polyamory have to be equally respected as ways we bi people live our lives. So C-Maurice, tell us about polyamory.
John. Polyamory is such a huge topic that your question is kind of like really a big question. Well, I can tell you this. I can tell you that polyamory, which basically means loving more than one, is essentially at least, and you'll talk to many people and they'll have many varied definitions of polyamory and how they see it and this, that, and the other. The way I experience polyamory is that it's about ethical, multiple ethical relationships. You know, it's about loving more people, multiple people in committed relationships. But it's also about bringing an ethical, honest transparency and a consensuality to those relationships.
Thank you. I think that's a great explanation that very much differs from what the explanation of polygamy is, which is a different thing in my mind entirely.
Yes.
Based on a patriarchal system of a man and more than one wife or partner or however you want to do that. And it's...
Let me ping in for that. I live in a very, very diverse community, which includes refugees from Africa who have multiple wives. It's a mixed thing. I've seen very happy families with, you know, one man and multiple wives in our community with their kids. And, you know, you really can understand a family by how the kids are. So I'll say that we have some Western notions of how we use the term polygamy. But, you know, we have to be a pretty open, we're an open society and we have to be that. And, you know, it really is about, in any relationship, it's about respect and mutual love and understanding. So,
yeah, I think that polyamory is for many relationships part of a polygamy or a polygamous relationship. But I think the two things are different. One is a social structure.
Yeah.
That and polyamory is a kind of a way of life and way of thinking, and it's a little different. I mean,
it's a lot.
I mean, it's
different.
It's a real conscious choice to be where you are, you know, and be who you are.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. The thing about one of the biggest differences between the two is that polyamory was really started here as a concept in terms of that specific word. I mean, obviously, polyamory covers a lot of the globe in terms of people having multiple relationships upon when you begin to analyze it. But as a concept here in America, it was actually started here, and I can't remember Raven somebody. I can't remember the couple's name, but in the 90s, I wish I could remember the couple's name. But anyway, they came up with this more or less hippies concept during the, you know, and they were obviously this, these people who kind of lived organically and all of that business. And I believe the woman is still alive and still talking. I listened to some things she had to say on YouTube not long ago. I just can't remember their name, but it's like, you know, one of those hippie kind of names. But it's, but the concept is specific, was born more or less here. The way we live it in America is more or less born here. Now it's evolved, obviously, and people bring various cultural mixes to it. But when you start talking about polygamy, usually polygamy is specifically connected to a religious group and religious traditions where a man might take on multiple women or as his wives. So usually when you start talking about polygamy, you're actually talking about someone being wedded to multiple women and that being sanctioned by their religion. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. that's not always the case, but in most cases, when you're talking about polygamy, that's actually the case. Whereas in polyamory, obviously in the States, it's illegal to get actually married to more than one person. That's bigamy. So, but it's not illegal to commit to more than one person, even though I believe it was only recently in Utah that they struck down a portion of the law that made it prohibitive to live together, to cohabitate, for multiple people to cohabitate together with the intention of being in a relationship. They actually had it on the books that they could not do that. So they struck that part of the law down recently. I can't go into the details. I just remember seeing it online. Mm-hmm. But those are some of the biggest differences, is that polyamory here in the States is very, very different, as John mentioned, from in a lot of cases the kind of polygamy that takes place in cultures around the world, where there is a, and that's not to say, what I'm about to say is not to say that there's not usefulness for polyamory and the same circumstance here in the States, but when you're talking about polygamy in third world countries, oftentimes, that's one of the ways that people are able to survive. You know, women might get with a man who has, you know, quite a bit of resources, and through him, they're able to actually survive, whether it's against a patriarchy that would, you know, abuse or brutalize women who did not have an attachment to a man, or whether or not mm-hmm. it's from within a culture where the woman was not able to find work or anything like that because, you know, she's also not connected to a family or to a man, or where she just needs to, you know, she doesn't have resources, she doesn't have a home or money or whatever, and all of those things are being funneled to men, to the men of society, and maybe she, you know, so there's a lot of different scenarios, yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm. And like, you know, and then we get back to the thing about choice. And one of the things that we have in our community that, which is unique and wonderful, is that if everyone was really truly honest with themselves, every other community, heterosexual, LGBT, any part of any sexual community, there's a whole lot of polyamory going on. I mean, but the uniqueness of the bisexual community is we embrace that and we talk about it and we understand it and we're not ashamed of it. That is the hope anyway. and so because we are able to do that and we have a better grasp on it, I think. I think we're able to share information and you know, experiences and help each other with it. And I think it's a much healthier situation in our community, and I think
when you say
we should celebrate that.
You mean in the bisexual community?
In the bisexual community, yes.
I don't know. You know, I mean, like Larry was saying just a little while ago, you know, the bisexual community has put forth so much of an effort, and I don't mean like now necessarily. I mean, obviously we've grown, but over the years since I, you know, became a legitimate part of the bisexual community, if you will, since back in the mid-90s, you know, as we were gaining traction and momentum, you know, there was a subtle intimation that it wasn't cool to be a bisexual person who loved more than one person simultaneously. I remember going into Yahoo chats and Usenet and looking for bisexual groups. And it was interesting because it was so difficult to find bisexual groups that actually were co-ed. You know, most of the groups mm-hmm. were either bisexual men or bisexual women.
Right.
You know, and if you managed to sneak into a bisexual women's group, you know, and they found out that you were a man, then they'd all jump on you and kind of kick you out and everything.
Uh-oh.
You know, so I don't know. I mean, I think that we're getting better about mm-hmm. embracing the truth. Like, I can't remember his last name, but Alan, but he's the guy who writes for that Percolation Holly website. You guys know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I ran into him at Atlanta had a poly weekend, I think is what they were calling it, a poly weekend conference, maybe a year and a half ago or something like that. Anyway, my girl and I went down and we met him there. Now, we had been following his blog for quite some time. And I remember back in 2003 or something like that, I was having a conversation in one of the Yahoo groups with people, and somebody made a comment about bisexuals, you know, and polyamory. And I forget what the comment was, but out of it, I asked the question of whether or not bisexuals were actually the glue that held the polyamorous community together. You know, and I was just basically trying to get some input. It was just something that occurred to me. And so Alan went and did the research and got the numbers on it. And he came to the conclusion that if bisexuals were removed from the polyamorous community, the polyamorous community would actually decrease by something like 40 to 45%. Right. So that's a huge percentage of bisexual people within the polyamorous community. But when you start talking about the reverse, polyamorous people within the bisexual community, while I don't know what the percentage of those numbers are, obviously bisexuals as a community have a larger monogamous population than polyamorous population. So the polyamorous people within the bisexual community would be a much smaller percentage in comparison to bisexuals overall, especially when you start thinking about the fact that bisexuals make up more than half of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
So the numbers of bisexuals who are actually polyamorous, I would imagine, would be relatively small. You know, in comparison to the bisexual population overall.
Or openly polyamorous. And I think that's another piece. There's another closet there that, I see this in my own community, and, even like people that are straight identified that, are poly that, mm-hmm. I mean, I only know it because I'm cool.
Because you're cool?
You know, because, you know, it's like, you know, it's not stuff that, it's stuff that these people don't really share, even within our own community, our own, you know, like social community. I think the same thing applies within our bisexual community, that there are people who are poly that really just don't organize around it a lot. So I would imagine those numbers are higher than any data would show.
But also, too, you get a certain amount of bias and phobia being the polyamorous person in a bisexual environment. You know, because then people think, okay, well, this person is polyamorous. You know, maybe they're coming on to people. Maybe they're trying to push forth an agenda, because you want to, if you talk about your relationships, now are you hijacking the bisexual topic? So there's a little bit of that and within the bisexual community. And then, of course, when you start talking about being bisexual in the polyamorous community, depending upon your town, your region, your location, you can have some phobia within the polyamorous community, which, you know, also tends to be sometimes couple-centric and heteronormative. So, you know, you kind of catch hell either way it goes, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of the story of our lives, but
yeah,
yes.
You're starting, I don't know what happened to the question, but I actually wanted to
Let me add this, Larry. The point that I was making was in alignment with what you were just saying about the having other closets. I think that, you know, a lot of bisexual poly people are in the bisexual community, but sense that they can't be out about being poly, you know, like you were saying. And I think that the reverse is also true when you start talking about being bisexual in the poly community. Some bisexuals in the poly community have a new closet there as well. So I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know that, especially kind of outside the polyamorous community, but in the swingers community, bisexual men are really seen as pariahs.
Right. And what's interesting about that is that so many, like, if you come out as bisexual within the swinging community, if you're the one who's out, then you become a beacon to all of the closeted bisexual men in the community, and especially in the mixed orientation marriages. So if a bisexual man, because it's obviously the swinger community is couple centric. So if a man is married to a woman and he's secretly bisexual or hetero or homo friendly or homo flexible or however you want to word it, you know, and in traditional swing environments, he keeps that under wraps because he doesn't want to get kicked out of the party or out of that particular leg of the community. But then he notices on a swing site that some guy is actually out about being bisexual. Then all of a sudden that person becomes a beacon and you start finding out who all the secret bisexual people are in the swing community. The swing community has its own, literally its own secret subculture that takes place.
Oh my goodness.
It just shows that we need to be out, you know?
Yeah,
and I find that in my community, being out, I get a lot of people coming to me, and there's people that I was just going to say, and that's why it's important to be out wherever we are. I find that in my community, there's people who I'm the only person that they're out to,
right.
Bisexual, in same and opposite sex relationships. And so, you know, wherever we are, just like you were saying, within the swing community, the secret communities of the secret communities really need to exist because we need to be out and we need to be supporting people who aren't out.
I think the thing that concerns me is that we've always fought this stigma of, like, we're all just like hypersexual and we're all just having sex with everybody all the whole time. So I think that a lot of people get a little frightened about the fact when we talk about polyamory, because we're struggling so hard to make people understand what we're about. And so it's an effect I call white picket fencing. We've seen it in the homosexual world happen quite a bit. And, you know, I really fear for us, because it is one of the things about us that makes us so unique, is we are so diverse and open and understanding about that everybody is okay. And all these things, you know, these are part of life, and we're very accepting of people. And I feel a little scared that we're going to go down a road that I don't want to go down.
What is that fear about? I mean, what precipitates?
Well, I'm afraid that we're going to try to start, you know, sweeping our diversity under the rug. You know what I mean? I mean, I understand that most of us are pretty much monogamous, but everyone in our community is important. And, you know,
exactly.
I fear that we're going to lose touch with the members of our community by trying to pretend like they don't exist. And we're about honesty to begin with. And I hate to see that kind of thing happen.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. I was, you know, reviewing some, you know, looking at some things last night on Facebook. And I know we just finished, yesterday we just finished the Bisexual Visibility Week and everything, you know, and there were a number of comments about where people were comparing, you know, trying to be bigger victims, you know, like some people were I know that they were upset about the by women not getting a feature spot a day in by Visibility Week, and they seem to disregard the fact that the name of the book that was being featured in by Visibility Week recognized the voices of bisexual men was what was being featured and not bisexual men per se. You know, however, that caused some people to take issue and then to start comparing the pathologies, if you will, and the issues that we as bisexual people have to live through in terms of, that we have high percentages of certain terms of suicide and drug abuse and rape and all of these other things. So I noticed that there were a number of people who wanted to compare, like, whether or not bisexual women deserve more attention because they have a bigger, you know, swill, a bigger swallow of the swill, if you will.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And it really bothered me that there needed to be a comparison of victimhood between bi men and bi women, particularly when you consider that as a bisexual movement, bisexual women have pretty much led and driven the movement. I'm not to say that bi men haven't been there, but what I'm saying is that bi men have always been less out than bisexual women. Bisexual women have traditionally been the people who have gained the most momentum and made the biggest strides in our community. Most bi authors are women. Most of the women who are at the political forefront of the movement, most of the people at the political forefront of the bisexual movement have been women. Now, that's not to say that they should just back down or anything like that, but what it is to say is that bisexual men have been so closeted for so long because of patriarchy and the lack of a voice and the lack of ability to stand up and withstand the stigmas and that sort of number, that sort of thing. That is crazy. I would think that bisexual women as a group, as a part of the community, would applaud bisexual men and support them in gaining some degree of visibility to say, yes, we are here. We do have men who make up our community. And it just really disturbed me last night to read some of the things that I read.
That's what disturbed me, too. You know, it's that I really believed that our bisexual women would really get this and, you know, be like, hey, you know, we support everyone in our community, and here's a chance for our men who are basically erased everywhere, you know, to support them and lift them up and you know, and help those young men who are, you know, feeling so terribly alone, you know. And I was really, I understand that a lot of it is based in how women are treated in the bigger world. Mm-hmm. I really understand that, but I had more faith. I really had more faith in us.
Yeah.
And it's not everyone. I think most people do get it, you know. But there are some that took issue with it. And
very,
you know,
vocally.
And next year, this is our first year. And, you know, there's another year. And we could have a whole month, you know. But I think that we did great things. And, you know.
I think it's tremendous. I agree. I really enjoyed the week. What I was more or less speaking to is the potential for division. I mean, we already have, you know, we can expect to have some degree of infighting, but when it comes down to that kind of splitting apart, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just really crazy to me. I mean, I don't know. It just really makes me.
Another one of our biggest dangers is this divisions get started and we seem to want to take off and they'll topple us.
Yeah.
That's all I can think is that they will.
Part of it is reclaiming our own history. That's why, like, Thursday I put up, Donnie the Punk's Wikipedia entry. It's 1966. He started the first campus homophile organization and came out as bi pretty quickly. And what really kind of precipitated that was that, you know, Stephen Donaldson, that's his name, what was his chosen name to protect his family, is included in the slideshow, which I saw a few times last week. You know, having our bisexual training PowerPoint presentation. And you know, and I never knew Donnie, but, like, because I'm in D.C., I knew a lot of people. I know a lot of people who worked with him in various movements, not just on not just on LGBT issues, but he was also a true prison advocate. He started the first group to deal with rape of men in prisons. So as a prison activist, it's a, you know, I hear a lot about him from that. Also from friends I have in like the Quaker community and the pacifist community and that work he did. People that say bi men don't go through a lot of the same kinds of physical abuse that bi women go through need the history of Donnie the Punk.
Yeah.
And that will hopefully putting that out and having people really understand our roots will give people an understanding that our real diversity and whose shoulders we're standing on.
Yeah, I think we need to be mindful of negating others' issues to promote our own.
Exactly.
I don't mean promote our own. I think we need to be in this together.
Mm-hmm.
We have varying degrees of issues about surrounding how we're treated, but it doesn't make any of them worse than the other one.
Right.
And I've heard some terrible horror stories from bisexual men. John has his own thing that happens, and this is a lifelong thing that's happened to him and to many others that nobody has been really talking about. The women, we get to talk about, you know, our rapes and our things, our abuse and our oppression, and it's never been acceptable for men to do that. They don't feel comfortable doing that. They weren't raised that way. And I think we need to help them come to the place that we can deal with this.
And on that note, I'm going to segue, if you don't mind, to the briefly, I guess, to the book that was being featured and acknowledged. You know, that's one of the reasons that I'm really, really excited about the book. You know, I noticed that there's a number of people who have written features or put art in the book. You know, people who I have met online but haven't had the privilege of meeting, as well as people who I know personally. And I'm really, really excited to have those voices speaking, you know, because I agree with you, Lynette. I think that those experiences, you know, our lives have been basically either shunned, swept under the rug, or disregarded for so long. And when you consider the weight of being men in a patriarchal system that, you know, not only imposes this will upon women, but it imposes this will in a huge way on men, because not only do we have to carry this weight through our jobs and our everyday lives, but we have to carry the weight through our relationships with our women, with our boyfriends, with our children. You know, and to be able to speak to those issues, to be able to speak to being violated sexually, you know, there have been no studies done on the preponderance of incidents and of those issues in the bisexual male community because men are afraid to come out. You know, when you do the numbers and you see that, you know, bisexuals make up more than half of the LGB community, that when they do numbers on women that, I forget the exact numbers, but a huge amount of women identify, more women identify as bisexual than do lesbian. But when you do the numbers for men, more men identify as gay than as bisexual. So when you start talking about being out, the people who have the lowest ratio of being out are bisexual men, whether it's in the gay community or in the straight community. When you start talking about men being raped, men being molested, men being assaulted, men being, you know, victims of their own emotional starvation, and what I mean by that is when we consume ourselves and we destroy ourselves because we don't have an emotional outlet. Now, I'm in no way trying to compare our experiences to anybody's, you know, and I can't speak for every man. I can only communicate my story and the stories of the men who have spoken to me and the books that I've read. But what I do know is that men carry a huge weight when it comes to, especially bisexual men. I can't speak for straight men, but bisexual men carry a huge weight when it comes to living under a patriarchal white supremacist society, especially black, but obviously black bisexual men by that. But we carry a huge weight in terms of what we have to represent as men just in order to get by in the world, and what we have to be ashamed of, and how we might feel damaged because we don't live up to the status quo about men. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just think this is faulty. I think it's faulty logic to expect our movement I think it's faulty logic to suspect or expect that you're going to benefit somehow by kicking somebody else. I just think you know.
I think that's it. And yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And the two genders, and I'll say the two genders, because you know, when we get into trans things, we have a whole other thing open up. You know, it's trans men and trans women. They're different experiences. That doesn't mean one is worse than the other. I mean, I mean, some things about each one are worse than the other. Mm-hmm. But trying to do a one-up. Exactly. I think that's bothering me is, you know, my pain's worse than your pain. I see that happen. It's just not very constructive to begin with. And I don't know. It's very selfish.
Yeah, let me put it this way. One of the things, getting to listen to our president, Faith, a good bit this week, not last week now, I guess. You know, one of her messages is one of our great superpowers as bisexuals is our resilience through all the crap that we've gone through. And it really, we've all got our scars, you know? Some of us cover them up really well. Some of us don't, but that's a power that we have to share, is our resilience through all the struggles that we've gone through. And that's a positive way of looking at it. The negative way is, you know, I'm hurt, and I'm hurt worse than you, and you're better, and so you think you're better than me, you know, and that's just, you know, that's not actually getting through the pain and actually being able to survive it and be resilient in our futures.
Yeah, and that's it. That's one of the things, is part of the survival is actually, and that does all come from pain. I think all come from a place of pain and not being able to get through it.
Yeah.
And what we want to do is help those people get through that. And it's hard to do. It's very hard to do sometimes to reach them. So
we need to make sure that our bisexual mental health resources are up to date around the country.
Yeah.
And I'm working on that too, at least in the local DC community, to make sure that we have good referral for people that come into our physical community that need this kind of help.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that when I, you know, one of the things that I found not more than a year and a half after being out was the Rape Crisis Center, who had a group for male bisexual and gay victims of rape and sexual abuse. And my God, it helped me so much. I got through so many things, and we need to keep that, we need to pay that forward. I feel like I need to pay that forward with people that come into our happy hours and our brunches and our round tables and to the table at Pride or wherever we find them. Because that's how we heal, and and we have to teach people our superpower of resiliency.
Yeah.
I hate to cut everybody off, but I'm not cutting you off. I just want to move on a little bit. So is there anything else you'd like to add about polyamory, though?
I don't know that there's anything else I'd like to add. I think that it's, if a person is polyamorous, I know a lot of people have a lot of suffering around, around desire, you know, wanting to have certain types of relationships and having, and having struggles finding the people to participate. And, my biggest, suggestion, because I hate giving advice, my biggest suggestion to them would be to start a poly community in your community. If you don't have, like I'm in New York and I have the luxury or the privilege and honor to participate in a very diverse polyamorous community here, Open Love New York, which you can find at openloveny.com, is a very diverse community here, is a central part of a very diverse community. They're not the only poly organization here, but, you know, it's a part of a very large community. And I would just recommend to other people in outlier towns where you don't have community organizations to start a group, start something, put something on Craigslist and start talking about, you know, creating something, you know, start off at Starbucks or, you know, in your basement, you know, if you're comfortable with that, but start something and it can just be two or three people and just see who shows up and begin to put together what you want. Most people, what they do in expressing their desires is they announce to the world online what they desire, but they don't bring with their desire any intent to give anything, you know. So right. If you want what you want, the best way to get what you want is to give what you want. So if what you want is love, give some. You know what I mean? If what you
exactly.
want, if you want is community and camaraderie and to meet like-minded people, be that person who creates that space. That's the
very
only
good
last
advice.
Thing I'll add.
That's pretty good. That's very good advice. What was that website again?
Oh, openloveny.com.
Openloveny.com. And like we always say, you know, that will be provided too. So I want to get to our last topic, and it's an important one to me, for me, and I know for you, and you've answered a lot of these questions on the, a lot of this question in the earlier responses. You are also a black bisexual man.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the particular, yes, and a very handsome one too.
Well,
I'll just
you.
Add that in.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the particular issues you face within the bi-poly and LGBT communities.
Wow, that's another really big question.
yes.
I'll try to be brief, though. The as a when you start talking about, you know, intersectionality, you know, i.e. me being black, me being bisexual, and me being a man, you know, it brings a lot of stuff with it. So what the issues are in the bisexual community is one thing. What the issues are in the poly community is another thing. And what the issues are in the LGB community as an overall umbrella community is a whole nother ball of wax, you know. So it's a really big question, but I would say that probably the biggest issue in the bisexual community would be connecting with like-minded people, finding each other, you know, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, the numbers for bisexual men who are actually out are on the far, far left side. So you're talking about, you know, a huge percent. I think it's something like less than 30% of bisexual men are actually out, right?
Right. Yes, 28% based on what study we're going to pull up today.
Yeah.
So with the vast majority of bisexual men not even being out, and then when you consider the black community where machismo and the need to be perceived as a traditional man is valued even more. There's more pressure in the black. I don't, you know, I mean, I know, cause, you know, I've dated interracially, which is a whole nother thing. So I know what it's like living in the white community as a black man, but I don't know what it's like to be a white man. So, but what I do know is that the, in comparison to the, in looking at the numbers, black men have a much harder time with coming out and bearing the brunt of stigma and stereotype than white men traditionally do. White men have their privilege and this, that, and the other as buffers, where, and they have the gay community's power and authority as well, whereas black men don't have that so much. So the numbers mm-hmm. of black men who are actually out are really, really small when you look at them. So I think the biggest issue for black bisexual men would be just finding one another, you know? And then when you talk about the poly community, again, the poly community, not as much as the swing community, but the poly community is tends to be couple centric and heteronormative to a great degree. So even there, bisexual men have to fight against bias and that sort of thing just to be a part of the community. Not as much in the poly community, but definitely is still there. And then in the LGB community, I mean, God, we can probably talk for a couple of days about all of the issues that exist against bisexuality in the LGB community. And I think most of it falls under the umbrella of biphobia. So,
mm-hmm.
well, I wasn't as yeah. brief as I had intended.
No, that's great. That's great. I mean, now we could talk for hours what it is like to be a queer black man. I mean, for hours and hours and hours, because it's, you know, and it's both for all genders, you know, because we do have privilege as white people. We do have a privilege that you don't have. So that's like another, you know, check mark against you.
At least start knowing my community here and the gay community, especially how it functions here. There's a lot of racism and division within the mm-hmm. gay community. So, you know, and, you know, I yeah. found that many, many, many years ago when I was really, that was all there was for me in terms of an LGBT community, the gay communities. One was predominantly privileged white middle class. The other was black, a lot of middle class people, but actually there was weren't all middle class people. And in some ways I found among that black gay community, a lot more diversity than I found in the white gay community. And I know these things still exist. The other thing I was going to say that I've been thinking a lot about, especially since I go to lots of groups and participating not just in the bisexual community or the openly bisexual community or the identified bisexual community, that there's a lot of men who identify as gay because there are resources. There are gay softball teams. Mm-hmm. There are gay bowling leagues. There are gay mm-hmm. courses. And we don't have, we have a meetup group, and it's right. a great meetup group. And we have a lot of really hot, cool bisexual people coming to those groups. But, we don't have that kind of infrastructure. So I've met a lot that people that are gay identified bisexual men tend to identify as gay because of that those communities that are big and exist.
Okay. I gotta catch you guys off. I gotta go. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And we can talk a lot more.
All right.
Absolutely.
John,
anytime.
Yeah, John, give us our link thing and I'll take us out of here. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So all the links will be provided on the website, and we can't get it anymore, so I'm not going to ask that.
Yeah, but, you know, we want to thank you for coming on, and you were fantastic, and we want you to come back and talk some more, okay?
Absolutely, anytime.
Well, it was fantastic. I want to remind everybody, you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, and you are a bisexual. And as John says, you got to fight for your right to party. Or I say that, and then John says.
Yeah, and you got to party for your right to fight.
High five,
yeah, boy.
Bye-bye.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Bynet USA or the Bicast crew. Anyway, yeah, we had our own.
One, two,
yeah.
Three.
Okay. Oh, calm down, John.
I know.
Calm down. All right.
Nip it back.